Fama Marketing Talk. This is your host, Fama Guy, and today we're going to be talking with Jeff Tangne, I think I pronounced his name correctly, I'm sorry, who is the CEO and founder of Doximity. Doximity is a physician network, and I'll let Jeff talk a little bit more about that. But the topic of the conversation today is going to revolve around physicians' clinical reading habits and how that can be helped, how we can help physicians better able to manage all the reading that they might have to do for life-saving medical news and how to make it more readable and engaging. So before I get too far into the topic, let me introduce Jeff. Jeff, I'm sorry, did I pronounce your name correctly?
You got it, John. Yeah, no, thanks for having us on the show. Appreciate it.
Sure. So why don't you just tell people a little bit about yourself and introduce them to Doximity.
Sure. So first, Doximity, we are the largest network of verified physicians in the U.S. So over half of U.S. physicians now are members. They securely refer patients, talk about challenging cases. And in just 3 years' time, we've grown larger than the American Medical Association, larger than the entire user base of Epic Systems, any EHR. We've pleasantly grown to over 400,000 U.S. physicians. A bit about me, this is my second company. So my last company was Epocrates, which got to 300,000 U.S. physicians as a mobile drug reference for doctors. I was president and COO there, co-founder there 11 years. And a lot of the team here hails from Epocrates, so as we joke, it's been putting the band back together a bit and a chance for us to do our second mobile app startup for doctors.
Well, sounds great. Every time you move, you increase by 100,000 doctors.
Yes.
But, Annie, seriously, I enjoyed talking to you previous to this about what you're doing there, and obviously I'm a jokester and I tried to get on to Doximity and make believe I was a doctor, but I couldn't get away with it, and so that was an experience. So I do appreciate that.
You just need a DEA number, John.
Yeah, I know. Well, you have to tell them where you graduated from and that, you know. So I'm not going to do that. But I often test that to see if, you know, if this is a real doctor's network, and I guess it is. But you did a survey and about the doctors, the reading habits of the physicians on your site. Why did you do this survey?
Good question. What we were seeing is that our personalized news product called Doc News was becoming one of the more popular pieces of the site. And what we were doing was basically looking at a doctor's resume, you know, their publications, their clinical trials. We even looked at what claims data they have. So if they do a lot of, subpercutaneous stents, we would offer them articles on subpercutaneous stents. So we saw that it was a burgeoning area of the site, and we wanted to hear more from our doctors about what they liked and didn't like about it.
Okay. So basically, you offer up what doctors are most interested in reading, but I want to make sure we try to make this a little bit relevant to the pharmaceutical industry, because I guess they also try to get information to physicians. Are you talking about, when you're talking about content and news, where do you get the news from and for your physicians?
So we don't write any news. We pull in over 600 different sources, all the major medical journals and even the non-major ones. And then really what our job is as a news curator, trying to pick the ones that that are most interesting. And so you're right, I think we do share a challenge with the pharmaceutical industry in that we're both really just trying to make efficient use of the doctor's time and get their attention. And it's hard. I mean, the average doctor it would take them 20 hours each day to keep pace with everything that is published in their specialty. So it's just not possible. So we thought that helping curate, helping them find the most important headlines was important. But as we got into it, we also saw that there were some other things you have to do to make it more relevant for them, which is, I think, a common challenge that we in pharma face. So we're happy to talk a bit more about what we saw that worked.
Okay. Well, why don't you talk a little bit about that? I know
okay.
we are talking, we made this simplified, like Sizzle Cells is the title of this podcast, even for doctors, and we're talking about headlines. Is that one of the important things to make it more readable, is to catch their attention by headlines?
Yes. So headlines is a big piece of it. And it's funny, in order to get published in a top peer-reviewed journal, I think what you need to have first and foremost is credibility with the editorial staff. And what that often means is trying to come up with the most boring headline possible so as to be more credible. So I have a couple examples here. I won't bore your audience too much with them, but you know, these are real headlines of actually very important papers that came out. The first one I like, identification of threshold prostate-specific antigen levels to optimize the detection of clinically significant prostate cancer by magnetic resonance imaging fusion-guided biopsy. So that is an actual journal title of actually a very seminal, a very important study. We found that just changing that to, you know, optimal PSA threshold for targeting biopsies, you know, it says the same thing, but went from getting zero clicks to getting thousands of clicks in the oncology audience. So what we actually do is we employ 90 physicians, each in different specialties, whose job it is on our side, they go through, they read these articles, and then they suggest factual but alternate headlines for them to make them more accessible, more readable. So to get published, doctors need to be credible, but to get read, you need to be accessible. And that's what we're doing. We're making a lot of this more accessible.
Okay, well, that sounds like something that everybody should be doing. Is this a problem with maybe other sites that physicians might be members of? Or I know, for example, there are drug companies out there that have their own sites. I guess one that comes to mind is Merck. I've been talking to people in Europe about Univadis. That's a site for physicians, and they also offer content. But do you believe that what you're doing is different than that?
I think everyone, of course, is trying to make their information accessible, easier to digest, having multimedia charts, that sort of thing, which we also do. I'd say the thing that we do that's a bit unique is, like some of these new sites like Buzzworthy and BuzzFeed and Upworthy, we're actually crowdsourcing the headline writing. So we're asking the doctors themselves, who are oncologists, and we have a half a dozen oncologists, and they actually compete with each other on who can write the best headline that gets the most clicks while still, you know, being factual. And that, I think, is important. They actually learn a lot from that. We give them a full feedback loop. A lot of folks that have their ad agency or someone who is an editorial staff go and write a better headline, but they're not really testing themselves and seeing what works and what doesn't. And by making it a little bit of a competition between the oncologists, we found that it does lead to much better results and some things that aren't fully intuitive.
Okay. Now, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how in general doctors are, what their reading habits are like? I mean,
sure.
Are there any interesting trends in that in terms of, you know, how they're reading medical journals or online? What have you learned about that?
Sure. So two areas I'll touch on here. One is subspecialization, and the other one is mobile. So let me start with mobile. You know, forget print journals, even computers. I mean, doctors are mobile first. They go from exam room to exam room all day long. They have a few minutes here, a few minutes there. We see that 70% of our use is via mobile devices, and 85% of that is on iPhone specifically. So if you're putting out content for physicians to read, really think about how it renders, how it looks, how well it works in a mobile format, because that's likely where it's most likely to be read. And we see tablets are also popular for reading news, but phones in particular during the day, that's where you're going to be reaching doctors. On the subspecialization front, a lot of companies, a lot of sites will have 30 different specialties that they send out weekly newsletters to, and we have a medical advisory board here. We get them together. They fly themselves out here once a year to San Francisco. We take them to dinner and breakfast, and it's 50 doctors. And I'm always amazed. The last one we were at, we had two ophthalmologists, both surgical ophthalmologists. So I would think very similar in terms of their news needs. And I made the mistake of making that comment, like, oh, well, you I'm sure, are getting some of the same messages from each of us. And what we've learned is that physicians' clinical interests are like snowflakes. They're all unique. And these two started a whole debate right in front of me about, well, this guy's a retinal guy, and I'm a cornea guy. We couldn't be more different in terms of our clinical interests. And yet, they're both surgical ophthalmologists. And I think that's really important to remember. I think we each see it in the areas that we're interested in. If John, we said that you were a guy who just covers, online health, I mean, that's such a broad category of different areas. It would be, I think, a vast simplification to say that that's what you do. And same with doctors. So for us, the key thing is turned out to be the big data, the algorithms that determine not at a specialty or a subspecialty level, but an individual doctor level based on what their stated and implied clinical interests are, finding their right articles. And the other thing I'd say is it's important for their careers to be that. So, we had one doctor who was the head surgeon, and he did a lot of subpercutaneous stents. And I remember he told the story that he was at a grand rounds, and a question came up about subpercutaneous stents, and he had read something on Doc News the night before that was coming out in JAMA that month in print, later that month. Anyway, it was important for him. He had to be, if you're not the smartest guy in the room in your area of subspecialty, you're really nothing. So for him, being able to speak up, know that that paper came out, and be the smartest guy in the room and know in advance of others about things in their area of clinical interest is actually a key success criteria in their jobs. So a lot of them view our Doc News as being as much like Google Alerts, where you're setting up alerts on particular topics as anything else. And I think that's how we built the service.
Well, yes, I use Google Alerts too. I wish they would learn a little bit about my reading habits. I mean, every once in a while I get, a few articles from there that I'm really interested in, but there's also a lot of stuff in there because maybe I put in the wrong keywords, probably. Is that how you Doc News works for you? How do they set that up?
Yeah. So it's really three different ways. One, they can put in their clinical interests just like you put your search terms into Google Alerts. And we see a good 5-10% of our doctors go do that. Then on top of that, we pull in data from their CV on what they've published on, what their research interests are, and even claims data from government and commercial sources, so we know what procedures they do the most. That also fills it in. And then on top of that, we actually look at what they click on. So wouldn't it be great if Google Alerts learned that this one alert that you keep getting a lot on that you never click on, to just turn that one down and turn that into a monthly summary instead of a weekly summary. We do that as well. I have to say, it's interesting to me that Silicon Valley doesn't like news that much. Google Alerts is a pretty unsupported product. In fact, there's been talk that they're going to end of life it. And that upsets me because I use Google Alerts and I think it's a great service. But the challenge that Silicon Valley has with news is that it's in a lot of different formats and a lot of paywalls, and it takes a lot of human ongoing engineering to keep it all working. And in our case, by just focusing on the 600 medical journals, and which covers everything in medicine, really, we're able to do that in a fairly efficient way. But we still have two engineers who really do nothing but make sure all of those feeds stay clean and the links still work. And so by focusing, I think we're able to keep doing it well. But it is hard for, you know, the news curators that are more general to keep it all working.
So this must be pretty important to the physicians on your site, because I think when we talked previously, you know, I thought that physicians on these social sites are talking to each other and having conversations and learning from each other, but you sort of indicated that that may not happen so much as people think, and that it's more important that they maybe get this kind of help and the information that they really need to read about. Is that true? Am I stating something that rings
well,
true?
Well, our experience has been, and if you look at the numbers, I think, on some of these chat rooms for physician-type sites, it's actually a very small percentage of it's the lonely docs club, you know, the guys who are kind of out of touch from a lot of other doctors who will go there and post. They'll typically only do it anonymously, and a lot of times they'll talk about politics and things that you know, that really aren't that clinical.
Right.
Well, we've seen, so I'll tell you, the first hit we really saw on the news front was citation alerts. So we know everything a doctor has published, and we know when they're cited. We have a couple partnerships to pull in all the citation data. And so we started by just sending an alert to one of our members saying, hey, you've been cited in a new article. And that we found was just a hit. We have over 70,000 citation alerts a month that go out to doctors, letting them know that their, you know, work that they did 10 years ago when they were still a student in the lab has now been cited in some other article. They love that. But then the thing that we did to build on that was we would give them a little author flag in the discussion around that new article. So if they had been one of the articles that was cited, or if they had written the original article, they would get a little author flag next to their name. And so that really became most of the open forum sort of discussion we see is around an article. And that, okay, I think, is a very tangible way to bring folks in to some of these discussions. And it creates these little tiny niche communities, you know, these guys who only do a certain rare procedure, total ankle replacements. A new article comes out about total ankle replacements, and now they're talking to each other about, you know, what does this study really mean? So we found that
Go ahead. Well, I was thinking within the context of the article, you have, like, there's a comment section or something like that where they can carry on these discussions much as I might do if I'm reading an article in Wall Street Journal or something.
That's it, exactly. And we see lots and lots of comments against these articles every week. The key thing that we do that's unlike, you know, a lot of online, you know, blogs and such is we do require the physician to be real name when they comment on it. And what we found is that means we don't have to moderate it because they will say things that are relevant and not just be snarky.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Well, how does the pharmaceutical industry work with Doximity? Do you have any relations with the pharmaceutical industry who might want to reach physicians on Doximity?
We're piloting some things. I'd say one of the reasons we're talking with you here is we are looking for more input about how we could work together. You know, our primary business is recruiters, so hospital recruiters, doctors recruiting for clinical trials, you know, being referrals. We have over 300 hospitals and now four of the top six hospitals in the country, as measured by U.S. News and World Report, as paying clients. Using us to, you know, source the right clinical expertise when and where they need it. But on the pharma end of things, we recognize there are opportunities to do more, and what we've been piloting really are sponsored versions of a couple of these articles. We turn the commenting off because that's just easier. And so that's something we've been piloting, but we're you know, interested in exploring other ideas with the industry.
Okay. Well, let me see. Now, you talked about curation, and you talked about the pros. Are there any cons associated with curation of the news that you're serving to your physician community?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest challenge is doing it right. You'd be surprised how quickly someone could be offended if they start getting articles that they think are outside their area of expertise. But honestly, I can count on one hand the number of bits of critical feedback we've had in that direction. And again, we have over 400,000 doctors. It reminds me, remember TiVo, the TiVo service? You'd watch TV programs through them, and it would record them as the first DVR out there.
Right.
There was a comedy show called The Mind of the Married Man, and I'm a married man, so maybe I related to it. But I remember he was watching some TV shows, and the title of the episode is TiVo Thinks I'm Gay, because he was watching too many shows that were coming back that were about topics that he thought were more effeminate. So I joke that we may have some of those same issues where people are reading headlines and they start seeing more of those headlines appear. And even though they're reading the headlines, it may not match their own self-perception. You're reading a lot about bedside manner.
You got to be careful these days what you do online, no matter where you are, because sometimes, it gets picked up and I'm not quite sure how those things happen. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We've talked a lot about what you're doing. I mean, did we cover everything, or is there something that you would like to talk about a little bit more that I didn't ask you, because we still have a few minutes left?
Well, one thing I'd say, it is important that doctors read. When doctors read, it saves lives. So 16%, 1 in 6 of our doctors reported that they saved a life last year. Directly because of something they read. And so, it's one thing to talk about this as sort of a media discussion around what's popular and what's trending and what's buzzy. But another way to look at this is, how do you make sure the right experts see the right information? And I think in our case, what we see is that it really is a pretty, as they say, long tail, a pretty really sub-specialized set of articles that do well amongst doctors. And so in that sense, we believe it's a pretty important public service to have doctors be more in the know, because they don't have time anymore. And the 20 hours a day to read all those journals, I'm not certain it ever really happened, but it definitely doesn't happen today, because you've got to see another patient every 8 minutes.
Well, what about the doctors who are reading or not reading? Do you have any idea about any characteristics of doctors who read a lot or don't read? Is there any trends there that you can tell us about based on your audience?
In general, there is a transition that doctors go through from being learners to being earners to back to being learners. And really what that means is, they're reading a lot more clinical stuff in their 30s. In their 40s, they're earners. They're in the crunch years of life. They tend to do less clinical stuff there, and actually more business type stuff. So, what do the new Medicare reimbursement rates for X mean for your subspecialty? That type of thing. Because they're also at that point managers of businesses and probably higher up in their organizations. And then in the late 50s, we actually see another uptick in the clinical learning again. And I think it's sort of the going back to school, being a mentor, making sure that I'm sharpening my saw.
Okay. So what about in terms of specialties? You have all the specialties represented on your site, as well as general practitioners. I mean, I suppose the specialists are the ones that read the most.
They are. But we do see that with primary care physicians, local news sometimes is very popular. So it's knowing where to refer to, that the hospital 50 miles away has just opened up a new cancer center that has, you know, a new cyber knife machine in it, for example. So it's more about staying connected to your professional network as much as it is around the latest, you know, views on is coffee good or bad for you. But inside specialists, we definitely see more minutes per session, more time spent reading per session, and more sessions among virtually all specialists compared to primary care.
All right. Maybe in ending, there's one final question here that I think maybe the audience for people in the pharmaceutical industry might appreciate the answer to. You mentioned something about best practices that the life sciences can learn from from Doximity success by adding sizzle to medical news. Did we cover all that, or do you want to review what the life sciences industry can learn from your experience when, I guess, they're creating their own content for our physicians?
Well, I don't want to sound too, you know, preachy or professorial here. I can tell you what's worked for us, and I think it may be applicable for the industry. You know, readable, interesting headlines can increase the amount your information gets read by, you know, 3 to even 10x. So that can matter a lot. And so if there's a place you're going to spend your time and actually split test, as we say, you know, try different things, it's probably around that headline. That's what gets you in the door. Second, making sure that it renders well on mobile and that it looks good from a mobile experience is important. Again, 70% of our physician use is on mobile. And if I threw tablets and others into there, I'd get to more like 80%. So it's pretty important. And then finally, subspecialization. You know, those two surgical ophthalmologists were really not that much alike. You know, every doctor's clinical interests really are a snowflake. And so don't send the cornea guy a retina guy's article. Really understand how those subgroups react.
Right. Okay, Jeff, great. So I forgot to ask you if you want anybody to get in touch with you who might want to learn more about Doximity or about how to create more interesting content for physicians. Would you like to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
You know what? That's a great question. I think we just created an email address just for a pharma. I can't remember what it is, so I'm going to give you mine. I'm just Jeff, J-E-F-F, at Doximity, D-O-X-I-M-I-T-Y. And as I mentioned, we are looking for win-win ways to work with industry, because we do hear a lot from our physicians that they would like to know about clinical trials. They would like to know about some of these latest results. And some of that are things that aren't available in, or aren't available enough in the current literature.
Right. Well, okay, Jeff. Well, is there anything else you want to say in closing? Thank you for being a guest. But if you have any closing comments, I guess now would be the time to do that.
No, John, it's been great chatting here with you.
Okay. Well, thanks for being a guest, and thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Pharma Guy saying goodbye until next time. Bye, Jeff. Thanks for being on the show.
Cheers. Thanks.